Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Grace View, a discussion forum of life-enriching topics that pertain to family, men, philosophical perspectives, women, and singles. The Grace View is a production of John Davis Marshall and the Solomon Society. The Grace View may be heard live Monday through Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by dialing 347-989-0722, or it can be heard at any time online at www.blogtalkradio.com/The Grace View. Now, stay tuned for today's episode of Sincere Singles. If you have a question or comment, please dial the number 1 on your phone and we will give you the opportunity to speak.
Good evening, everyone. I'm your moderator, Robert McFall, for this evening. And we want to thank you for joining Sincere Singles this evening. Tonight, we have a pleasure of having Sister Humphrey that will be leading in this discussion. She will be talking about growing up motherless / fatherless, and I believe that some of us, if not majority of us, might be able to relate to this or might be going through this with our kids right now that's going through that. So without further ado, I will turn this over to Sister Humphrey. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Happy to speak with you today, tonight. And last month, I was asked for to choose another topic, and I pretty much choose things that I have familiarity with. Last month, the topic was, I think, getting over something about single motherness or something like that. I can't even remember. But growing up fatherless, I grew up without my father in my life. My father passed away when he died when I was 2. And I really, the stories that I heard about, the character of my father, he was a substance abuser, and he ended up dying at a very young age. I believe he was like 27 when he passed, and I kind of developed a hatred for him because he chose that life and wasn't there in my life throughout any parts of my life that I couldn't remember. So one thing that I really wanted to focus on was the fact that I didn't get over that until I think I was probably 30, between 30 and 35, and it was through my nursing career. I ended up working on a med-surg detox unit where I helped people get over their substance abuse issues, and I actually came across one individual who, kept coming back. We always had the repeaters, but this one in particular, he had a very young daughter. So I identified with that, and I talked with that patient one-on-one, and it was like I really explained to him where his, the problem that his daughter would suffer all these years, and how I'm just now, or how I was just facing it, and that how I hated my father all that time until I realized the struggle that he went through with drugs and being in an environment where you see patients on a continuous basis suffering, coming in and out, saying that they're trying but not having the the strength and the wherewithal and the support to give that addiction up. I was able to soften, you know, my outlook on that experience and really have a forgiving heart for the knowledge that I had come to. So anyway, that is how this topic relates to me. And, you know, everybody has a different experience with how they are fatherless. Some people come out and be fatherless due to divorces, death, and, you know, any different circumstances of death. Even just their parents never got married. So I would love for someone to share their personal experience in relation to the topic at hand.
This is Bubba McFall. And when I was told about this topic, I was like, that was a very interesting topic for you to pick, which it's almost a day-to-day thing in the world today. So I applaud you for that. And plus, at the same time, I grew up fatherless and didn't know my father at all, period. And my parents was never married, but it's just one of those things where I grew up that way. And in some circumstances, in the situations that I faced through my childhood, I kind of built up a little anger, as you have, and towards my father, because of the fact that I didn't agree on some of the things of why he wasn't there. What was the reasons behind it? And some of the things I felt that if he was there, I would have never went through some of those things. Even though just going through that and at a young adult as well, I was still blaming my father for a lot of things, for things that I was not able to comprehend as a young man, as a used to be husband, as a father, myself, and everything. So it was a lot of things I blamed my father for. But the thing about it, I had to really get help with that. And eventually, when things was crashing around me, I eventually turned to God. But prior to that, I did go get counseling for that, for a lot of things that I went through, and kind of helped me to somewhat come to grips with who I am, or who I was, or who I am at that time frame, and not to allow my situation to get involved in that. And I think sometimes we as childless mothers or fathers, we can get into that situation where we blame our father or our mother for things that we shouldn't blame them for, and claim that, you know, this is the reason why I am who I am. But at the same time, I think if we take a look at it, there's some things that if we take the good out of it, we can see how God intertwined and helped us to be who we are. You know, not everything is bad. Not everything is bad. And, you know, yes, some things not good either. But if you take the good out of it, you can see some of the things that it can help you to be a better person and what road you might be on. Years before that, I kind of came to grips and I was forgiving him. But I never really said it to him until last year when he was facing death. And it really, you know, I was the only biological child or biological next of kin for him. So everything was put on my shoulders. And people was like saying, oh, this man never done nothing for you. This man never done nothing for you. Why are you doing this? Well, as a child of God, a Christian, I felt that that's what God let him put on my heart to do. And
right.
And I traveled back and forth, up and down, from Florida to Jacksonville, Florida to Jacksonville, during that time frame. And during that time frame, well, at least he met his granddaughter, and they connected for a little bit. But prior to all that, but to sum it up, during that time where, you know, he was on his, you know, pretty much his deathbed, I prayed with him and for him for at least two days straight. And it was just me and him, and basically, I said 2-3 days. And then basically, I told him within that, I said, I don't hold nothing against you. You did the best that you could do. I forgive you. And God forgives you. And I made peace with him right then and there. And I believe throughout that whole time frame of me praying and doing all those things, I think it helped me have closure, but I believe also it helped him to have closure to where he was able to let go. So that was my story, and I think that the things that we come upon as fatherless and motherless, that sometimes we got to remember, we got to forgive, even though as much as they might have done us wrong or as much as whatever the situation may be, if you hold on to that grudge, it can really control your life and keep you from doing the things that you need to be doing. So that's my story, and I let you go and turn it right back over to you.
Okay. So there's actually a I was looking at YouTube relating to growing up fatherless, and Roland Martin, he had, I think, like maybe about a 5-minute segment that I wanted to play, and he's addressing, I think, maybe a panel of about 5 or 6 people who came up without fathers and how it has influenced their life. So I'm just going to play that really quick, and we can talk about it afterward.
We're joined now by 3 men who know the importance of having a male influence in the life of a child. Pastor Frank Stewart is the author of Father Deficiency, the Most Needed Vitamin in America. Marcus Taylor's father was a powerful presence in his life when he saw what the lack of a father did to his friends in the neighborhood. And Jabari Moore, who wants to be an even better father than the one that raised him for his month-old daughter. Gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch. I have made a concerted effort when I've been on TV One, on radio, in print, to talk about what my dad means to me. And it's interesting how we often would think that it's such a powerful story that somebody tells about not having a dad. But I think it's also an equally powerful story when you talk about what dad actually meant in terms of raising you and teaching you and instilling you, yet people just don't actually think that's really that important. Marcus, what did your daddy mean to you?
I don't think I would have made it without him, because I wasn't always in the place that I'm in now. I'm about to graduate with 2 degrees, but I was once told that I wouldn't graduate high school. I was told that I would be a dropout because I was involved with the wrong things. But my dad never gave up on me, or my mother there in the crowd also, and they never gave up on me. They taught me, no matter how bad it looked, never give up on a person, because God never gave up on you.
I hear a lot of parents, and I hear a lot of fathers who say, I want to be my child's friend, and I'm going, no, I ain't your friend. Can a father be a child's friend, or should daddy be daddy?
Should be daddy first. Got to be daddy first.
Now, Jabari?
Yeah. And that's a great point. My dad was the parent, and he was the order of the house. And as I became older, we didn't have that relationship of a joking relationship until I became an adult. My dad was dad. I mean, you could joke with dad to a certain point.
Right.
But
you knew what your
level was.
You can joke with mama like all day, all night, and dad is like, you know we're done, right?
Right. Right. All he had to do was show the belt.
Oh, he showed the belt?
That's all he had to do. I want to comment on that. Honestly, one of the things that affected me most, and it may sound crazy, but it was that I could I seen my daddy as daddy first, but I also seen him as not just daddy, but I can he's a friend of mine. As far as when I need something, when I just want to talk, he'll listen. My dad don't have the character of everything is serious. He loves to laugh. He loves to joke, and he loves to show love. And him doing that, he taught me that, man, it's all about love. You don't have to be serious all the time. You don't have to be. Now, when it get real, you gonna know. yeah, but.
So I think that is, like, really important, not always being, like, a dictator in the family, and your children being able to relate to you and come to you with anything that is on their mind and feel that the relationship that the parent and the child has is open enough that they, you know, are safe to speak to you about everything and that's going on in their life. Because when you break down the communication barrier, a lot of stuff happens and children start going wayward. So that wasn't really the one that I was looking at. But I thought that was really cool how I see a lot, or in my experience, people are always
we're talking about the fatherhood
harboring and focusing on the absence when it comes to society. And with that absence, the detrimental life that that is awaiting in the future for children who have an absent mother or father. And when children grow up with that outlook, it's almost like, you know, this is what the expectations are, so here we go. So if we could focus on people who have overcome and, you know, broken the cycle, then maybe we can have a few more, you know, maybe we can have a better outlook, because it is what it is right now. And with the media almost with the media embracing this, and then also the court system, when families break up, those who are together, it's like they go through every loop to keep the father as far out of that life of that child as almost as possible. You know, you never hardly ever hear, especially with a black family, that the man has custody of the child. And for, you know, various reasons. But for various reasons, that man needs to be in the life of that child, and the woman needs, you know, both of them need to become at peace with the separation that has occurred in order to continue to have balance, whether you're together or not.
Yeah, sister, that's very interesting how you say that, because I had, when me and my ex split different ways and then eventually divorce paperwork came afterwards, I had my daughter. And I raised her throughout that whole time frame. But I say this to say that the way it was explained to me, which I understand why, when you have that, you as a parent should not belittle the other parent, because if you do that, you're hurting that parent relationship with that child, and it makes it even worse. And then sometimes you can damage your relationship with your child, because eventually if those stories are unfalse or they find out that you was doing things just to keep them apart, now as they get older, they're going to resent you and those things that you was doing, after, even though they was looking up to you towards that time, they didn't know no better. So, yeah, the court systems do that and everything, and keeps a child away from the dad or the mom and everything like that. But when we had our segment, me and my things in Jacksonville, we talked about how technically, and I understand it comes to be financial situation where, okay, you ain't doing your part, you don't need to see the child. But sometimes you should not allow or you as a stick and stone get money to keep the child away from the other parent. As long as the parent is really genuinely trying to do things and they're not in a danger or anything like that, there should be no reason because of the fact that you need the other parent. If the other parent wants to be and step up to be that parent, don't keep them away from that, married or not married. You need to be careful of that because you cause problems. But you brought some good things with that as far as being how the system in some ways can cause problems with keeping a child and a parent apart because of the way they do things. And I think that if we learn to do better, we can do better, and the child can do better. Because look at all the young men now that's going through issues right now without a father. They run amok. And not saying that the daughters is not. The daughters is somewhat close to that as well. So we're raising or we're allowing young adults to run amok with no guidance, no nothing, and we're blaming the system, but we're allowing the system to do it to our children, and we blame each other because you're not doing your part because you ain't giving me no financial means, even though that is a good necessity because raising a child does cost money, but somewhere down the line we have to come to an even keel and help one another out during that time frame because it's not about us, it's about the child.
Exactly. And then, you know, since you talked about some of the statistics, I was looking and where is this at? The U.S. Department and Health Census says that there's 63% of youth commit suicide because they're in a fatherless home, and then 90% of homeless runaways, 85% of children who act up in school are from fatherless homes, and 71% high school dropout. So with that, you know, with those statistics and that kind of, you know, knowledge, why is it that the court systems are encouraging almost so much separation, especially within specific socioeconomic groups? You know, we should, if we kind of cared more, then we would band together and be better with our children in that aspect, you know, to hold the bond of, you know, more security and decrease a lot of these issues. But I think a lot of it is, you know, selfishness.
Before you go any further, I just want to, I see that we got a lot of callers here. If any of the callers have any comments or concerns or want to add to this nice topic here that I think we're having good, just dial the number one on your telephone keypad, and we'd be much obliged to let you chime in. You can add your two cents or however you want to call it. I'm just saying, if anybody wants to add in, just chime in, because this is the time for us to really talk and discuss and open up and share ideas and share thought processes, and maybe we can help somebody that's going through something like this. Just dial the number one on your keypad. Go ahead, sis. The floor is yours again.
Yeah, so if we, you know, if we look at ourselves and look at the future of our children, then we can make some adjustments for the child and get beyond the, you know, because, you know, when you're you know, relationships, I feel like relationships are probably just like working relationships. You go to work, you don't get along with everybody that you work with. You're not always going to have a union, or you just have to look at it as, I see lots of things on social media where they talk about some people are here for a season and others for a lifetime. And, you know, that's the way that I look at relationships on a, you know, in a day-to-day basis. Everybody's not here to be in my life 24/7 or for 10, 20 years. There's a reason, there's something that I had to learn, and whether it was a hard lesson or not, I don't bear ill will toward the person. I look at the situation and examine it and, you know, take some sort of analysis of how it made me better and whatnot. But I say that because I'm a single mother, and my daughter, you know, in our circumstances, I never talk bad about her father. It's like when she says something negative then about him trying to reach out, you know, because he wasn't there for a season, and now he's really making an effort, and a lot of children, they hold some animosity toward that because, you know, you weren't here before, so why are you trying to be in my life now? And I tell her, I'm like, you know, there's no time like the present. Don't harbor on the past, because you can't do anything about the past. You can't go back there. You can't repeat it. It happened. And now look at today.
Yeah, sis, that's that there is a good way to look at it. And I guess I would ask this question to you and to the audience. I know we're talking, you know, more about the parents, but I guess in some ways, in the way, the question I think, you know, maybe is that, is there, how does the child feel? Where is the child's feelings with this growing up without their mother, without their father? So anybody have any, it don't have to be examples, but have anybody experienced or seen kids or dealt with kids that had to deal with difficulties of not having their mother or their father around, maybe, if, you know, dying, or maybe just walking out and not wanting to be around, or you never really knew your child, knew your parent or parents, because sometimes you get some that's been adopted and never knew their parents. Do anybody have any thought process on that and everything? I think we do got a caller here. 1 second, it says, caller dialing in 0442. You're on the air.
Yes, I have a comment about, I'm a single mother of two children. One is, she just graduated from high school and is college bound. And I think sometimes as single parents, you know, I understand that we shouldn't talk bad about the non-custodial parent, but I think sometimes we do our children an injustice by not being honest about the situation. In my situation, my child's father chose not to be an active part. He was around, but he wasn't active. He was more like a holiday parent, you know, and that was pretty much the only times that she saw him. But at the same time, I never talked bad about him, but I didn't embellish him either. I told her, because what I understand specifically for a girl, young men too, if you don't teach them, of course, if the non-custodial parent is not being the example, but we esteem him or her as an example, then that child will still use that non-custodial parent as the example. So what I've consistently done with my children is I've told them the truth. And one thing, one principle that I live by in my entire life is that you cannot draw water from an empty well. And I had to learn after the fact, God was my standard for fatherhood. I didn't have it growing up, and so I learned it later. So that's basically what I teach my children. And she has grown up, even though he's chosen not to be there, she's grown up, and she's always kept that door open. On those holidays, she's loving towards him. She's never resistive towards him. That's because I never gave her a false sense of expectation from him. You know, and one of the things that I didn't do also is I didn't pursue the relationship, because what I find is that when the mother pursues, well, this is just from my perspective, so I'm just speaking from a mother's perspective. When the mother pursues the relationship and the father is not pursuing it, but he just goes along, a lot of times what happens is when that child is in the custody of that non-custodial parent, he makes the child feel more like a burden than a blessing. And what I mean by that is, here's an example. Those blue moons when my daughter would go visit her father, he would say, well, let me find somewhere for you to go so you won't get on my nerves. So I didn't want her to feel like she was a burden or that she wasn't wanted. So I never pursued that. Whenever he wanted her around, then, of course, those opportunities were open for her. But I also taught her along the way, this is the standard for parenthood, because I can't teach her, I can't teach my children that I love you as a parent. And the reason and how I show my love for you is that I provide for you. I teach you. I try my best to set the right example for you. I try my best to protect you. I do all these things, and that's evidence that I love you. And then I turn around and say that this non-custodial parent that does none of that stuff loves you equally the same. I allow him to prove his love for her. Now she's at the point where she's a little bit more vocal about him not being there for her, you know, to me anyway. But we've always had this open dialogue. But I think it's very important that we don't embellish the ineffective. I'm not saying just the non-custodial parent, because there's some very effective present non-custodial parents in their children's lives. But I'm saying that those parents who choose not to be in their children's lives, it's unhealthy for us to paint a picture that's not honest just to protect their image. And one thing that I always say, and I'm sure a lot of single parents can agree with this, is that I don't have to talk bad about you. I don't have to tell her bad things about you. You'll prove yourself to her eventually anyway.
Right. I'm glad you said that, because I agree 100%. And when my daughter asked me about, you know, the relationship, when it, you know, how it started out, I told her. They were, you know, it's like, you know, I gave her that information.
Right.
And didn't, you know, sugarcoat any parts of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, he has another child, and she gets a lot of negative, you know, real bad vibes from this other party, and it's just like, wow. So then she tries to adapt and adopt some of those attitudes. And I said, you know, you didn't, before you started talking to your sister, I don't recall hearing these kind of comments coming out of your mouth, you know. I try to, you know, enforce in her, don't let other people mold your attitude towards another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
one of the things that I try to instill in my girls as well is that, and this is just a principle that I use for my own life, because it is really about sometimes having high hopes and low expectations, because we have to protect ourselves emotionally, even when nobody else chooses to. You know, and so what I tell her is that sometimes the nature of the relationship creates an expectation. Basically means that if you're my mom, I expect you to be this kind of way and do certain things for me. Same thing with a father. But the reality of the relationship is total opposite. So do I continue to have those high expectations and continue to allow my volunteer myself to be disappointed time and time again, or do I recreate my expectations and the nature of my relationship? And so what I teach her is that now, of course, she's 18, college bound, and very mature, and she has a very healthy perspective. But I have to be honest with her, and I say, the way your dad is as a father, that is not the standard. I have to be honest with her, because if she believes that he's the standard, she'll settle for a man the same way, and she'll be walking in these shoes all over again, repeating a cycle. You know, and so, but what I tell her is that because you understand some things, the nature of your relationship has now shifted. And where he was supposed to be your teacher while you were growing up, now it's a role reversal. Now you're going to be his teacher. Not to teach him how to be a good father, because you can't do that, but to teach him how to love in spite of, teach him how to keep a door open. You know, teach him about grace. Whenever you decide that you want to be in my life, and this is the attitude that she has, and I'm so thankful for it. Whenever you decide that you want to be in my life, first of all, understand that the door is open. But also understand that I have expectations that you have to meet, because I'm responsible for my own emotional well-being. And I can't allow you to play with my emotions in order to stroke your own ego or make you feel good about being you. This is not just about you. I'm in this relationship too. And I have to guard my heart, because this relationship means a lot to me. And you haven't measured up to it, so I have a responsibility to protect me even when you chose not to. And that is 100% okay for her to have standards for him, specifically at this point in her life.
How would she go about addressing him with those standards?
Well, at this point, of course, she graduated from high school, and he wanted to come in the picture. It's really interesting, because I believe that one of the deterrents from him being in her life was the financial obligation, because he's never consistently done anything. And so here she is now out of high school, going and still taking college courses, on her way to college, and he wants to enter back into her life as somebody else is beckoning, but there's still a financial obligation, you know? So even though you're coming in now, I still need you for some things. And I know the cycle very well. And she said with her own mouth, she says, okay, if he chooses to fade to black, which most likely he will, because it's coming with a price, I'm going to take his money and he can fade to black. But he has to understand that the nature of the relationship still requires him to be a giver. And if he doesn't want to be a giver, even at this point, because a lot of times non-custodial parents think that just because a child graduates from high school, they turn 18, that they are exonerated from all responsibility. And no, that's a young adult. She still needs things, you know. And so I told her up front, I said, okay, well, I see him voicing some standards and some stipulations for these little small amounts of dollars. And I said, well, if the need continues to persist, most likely he's going to fade to black. And this is the way that I've conducted the whole time since she was young. This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. And, of course, the older she got, the more I allowed her to make some decisions. But I painted a very vivid picture so she wouldn't be as disappointed when things didn't turn out the way she wants them to. But she has a voice. She's very respectful towards him. But she'll say, well, you know, she would literally say, well, I mean, I'm used to it. You know, I'm used to you not doing certain things. So she's charging him. She's holding him responsible in a very respectful way, and I'm proud of her for that. Because a lot of times, because he didn't have a relationship with her, he still embraces her as a little naive five-year-old, where you can speak words and the kid will just go berserk just because you promised her some things. But now she doesn't get, okay, it's been a long time. She don't get excited about words. I need some tangible evidence. So our language now is, well, we'll see. That's her. She'll say, well, we'll see. This is what he said, but we'll see. Basically, I have high hopes but low expectations. If he does, he does. If he does not, he does not. And one of the things that I say, if he says he's going to do something, because I've struggled financially taking care of my children, you know, without any support. But I tell her all the time, I said, but God has always provided for us. I said, if he doesn't do it, it's going to get done regardless.
Okay, so. I just want to, I mean, one quick second. If anybody has any other comment, because my sister's really put in a good seed into this. If anybody has any comments, dial number one on the touch tone, and we would love to hear you guys' comment and concerns, whatever you want to bring to this table of discussion. There's no right or wrong answer. It's just things that we as adults have experienced and as children and children right now that are experiencing. So if you just want to add in, just go ahead and do so. And matter of fact, we do. I have a caller ending in 1340. You're now on the air.
Yes, I want to make two comments on something that one of the ladies said earlier, how the father is usually not the custodial parent. That's true. However, I do know a brother here in the area where I live. He and his wife divorced. She met him, and she's married to a woman now. And they had two sons. Both of the boys initially stayed with dad, but the oldest child, who is a teenager now, bonded with his mother at an early age, so he chose to move to where the city and state that she lives now with her partner, and that older child is there. But the younger one is with his dad. So lots of times it would be good if the parents let the children choose who they prefer to stay with versus causing, you know, havoc. It's bad enough when divorce takes place, but it's even harder when the mother uses the children as a pawn, which is what some of us tend, you know, to keep them away from their father. I am a divorced mother. I have three adult children now that I pretty much raised without their father. He was in the picture. He had them only when I called and said, hey, I'm bringing your kids over so they can visit. And I never said anything negative about him throughout their life. I always said to friends, they will learn who their father is. And they did exactly that. My daughter is 30 now, and she, I say maybe in the last 5 years, has started to build a relationship with her father because they found out who he was. I didn't have to say anything. I didn't have to say anything about it. And that's what I wish that a lot of our mothers don't say anything negative about, you know, build them up. Tell them that, you know, just because things didn't work out between myself and your dad doesn't mean that he doesn't love you. And that's what I used to always tell them. It doesn't mean that he doesn't love you. He loves you just as much as I do, if not more, But he does love you, and you just continue to tell your children that their father loves them, but different ways of people showing love. And like I said, they learned who he was. A lot was negative, and since they're adults now, some of it is positive. But when they were growing up, they didn't, and we live right in the same city. I never moved because I wanted them to be near their family. So, it's just different for us. Different
people, and they handle it in different ways. I think that's, really, really key, because I have several friends who they want their children to feel that love of the absent parent, and they will go so far as to buy gifts or, you know, their birthdays or Christmas, and, you know, fake like it was from their dad. And then when they, you know, when they're teenagers and they're, you know, all of these things are not being reciprocated, and they realize that my mom was lying to me. Now they've damaged their relationship with the child all to fakely build this man up, and just instead of letting them see for themselves exactly what was going on and talk with them, that, you know, people show love in different ways. They grow to a point, maybe, you know, some people are not mature, and they haven't matured.
Go ahead.
That's something that I never did. I let him be him. I took credit for what I let him take credit for what he did, even if it wasn't. You know, just like my kids, when they were younger, I'm sorry, but the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus did not exist in my house, because I said, I'm not giving some red suit credit for things that I work hard for. My kids know I worked hard to get them the things that they had, what they needed, and something they want. So I'm like, I work hard to do this. I'm not giving somebody else the credit for it. My grandmother, she said, Santa Claus ain't coming, and they would tell correct her if it was Santa Claus not coming anyway. You know? But my thing is, that's so true that you have to be honest with your kids, because if you tell, that's another lie. Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy. Why would you tell your children? And then when they get old enough, I mean, some kids are devastated when they found out that there's no Easter Bunny and there's no Santa Claus and no Tooth Fairy. You know, my kids came up and said, you know, my tooth came out my head, here's a dollar, leave me alone, you know, whatever. But I'm not putting no tooth under the pillow and leaving them a quarter, a dollar, whatever. No, because when they find out sometimes that's like, well, you lied to me. So why would you want to lie to your children in telling them these things about these fairy tales, as well as lying to them about what their father is doing if they're not doing anything? And any man can father a child, but it's a strong man to be a dad.
Yes.
Whew, you guys on a roll here. I didn't want to interrupt you guys. We got less than 15 minutes, closing in on 10. We would love to truly hear more comments. I pray and hope there's a brother out there somewhere other than me. But anyway, if anybody has a comment or concern, please dial the number 1 on your keypad, and we would love to hear your comments and stories or whatever you would like to contribute to this conversation about motherless and fatherless children that have to deal with things that they have to deal with. I'm going to say this, and I try not to put too much of a spin or tell too much of my story too much, but I'm going to say this. Through my time as a child, I don't really often say this, but I guess everybody's going to know about it now, but I myself had a hard time as a child, and not to get into too many dramatics, but I myself wanted to run away from home. I myself felt abandoned, I'd say suicidal in some stages because of the things I was going through. So like I said before, I was feeling that hatred towards my father as why, but we must understand that there's nothing wrong in being a child that's fatherless or motherless, to the extent to say this: if everybody does their part, the child can grow in a nurturing way. When that is out of the equation, then that's when things can be a problem with the child itself. Because, once again, I say this, it's not about the father and the mother, per se. It's about the child. What the child needs, what the child sees. And remember, that child is going to become a mother or a father, or better yet, a man and a woman or a woman. And so with that being said, don't we want to raise our children up in the nature of the way that they need to be? So we need to take a step back and look at these things and understand that the world is okay with, yes, I can be a single parent. Yes, I can do this. You know, women was not meant to shoulder all the burden of raising a child, being in the home, bringing home the bacon, doing all these different things. That's not what they was made for. Not saying that they can't do these things, but that's not what they was made for. Same goes with the father. The father was not made to be a nurturing mother by himself because he's a man. He doesn't know how to do that. So that's why God presented man and woman to be able to come together and nurture a child together. It was not for a child to be mothers or fathers. So that was just my two cents. I want to chime in.
Robin,
if anybody has, yes.
Let me add this on that point. I had a conversation with a bunch of singles some years ago, and it disturbed my spirit so much. But one thing that the Lord showed me years ago when I was faced with that divorce, and I said, okay, well, yeah, you're going to have to raise this child by yourself. This is not what you planned. And I wasn't a big student of the word then, but I remember crying and praying. And I opened up my Bible, and I literally asked God to minister to me and help me raise this child. And I opened up the book, and it turned, and he showed me the verse where he says, I am a mother to the motherless and a father to the fatherless. And I think that mm-hmm. is so imperative in raising our children, because what happens is there is a difference between having a broken home and having a dysfunctional home. And too often we transfer our single parents, our single grief over into the lives of our children. And we make them believe, because of where we are in our broken spirits, that because you don't have a father in your life, there's something wrong with you. And we don't even understand how we do that. One thing that I told my children, and because I remember having this conversation with a bunch of Christian brothers, and they said, no, because they don't have fathers in their lives, they're going to always be missing something. But I read that he's a father to the fatherless, and so I'm holding on to that. But what happens is, I told my children, I said, don't you ever allow anybody to make you feel that because you come from a broken home, not a dysfunctional home, because there are a plethora of mother mm-hmm. of households that have mothers and fathers that are broken and mm-hmm. dysfunctional and produce some very disturbed, troubled mm-hmm. adults. And I told my kids that we have the peace of God in our lives and in our homes. Your house is broken because you're not being raised by both your mother and your father, but you have a whole household. You have happiness, you have joy, you have everything that you need in this household. So don't ever let anybody think that just because your situation is broken that you have to be broken. And as a single mother specifically, I know some young ladies, they if your daddy would do this, or if this was this, or if this was that. No, I instill in my children, it doesn't matter, because I understand that it's not just about what your daddy chooses not to do for you, but God can do for you what I can't even do for you, and I'm here for you. And so we have to make sure that we put that seed of completion in the minds of our children, even in broken homes, because just because it's broke doesn't mean that it has to be dysfunctional, and just because it's broken doesn't mean that God can't use it for his glory.
That is correct. Sis, you said a mouthful right there. You said a mouthful. And I appreciate it, and you keep doing your thing, because I know that you do a lot there. So keep on speaking. Sister Humphrey, I think I don't want our time to get away from us. We're down to about 5 minutes to go. Is there anything, as we get ready to close, that you want to reiterate, want to say, or any last comments or concerns that you would like to put out to our listeners?
I'll say, like, piggybacking on that, on your, I don't know what the sister's name was that just spoke, but in my family, my sister and my brother, they got married. I never married. And they're, my daughter and their children, they look and they compare, you know, happiness between our family, and they're looking at they're like, you know, if life has to be like this, and then not even, you know, just those, the our two homes, but in their relations with other children and family members who are in these bonded families that are constantly fighting and, you know, arguing and everything with one another. In many cases, we push our children to this single life and not knowing how to relate to one another and the growing pains that we have with one another because we're different and not accepting and compromising with the circumstances of life, whatever they may be. So I have, I get that from them, and they're like, you know, I'm never going to marry just like you and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Wow.
And I'm like, what happened here? But I'm happy in the state that I'm in, but in the same token, it's like I'm not trying to be that example for them to follow purposefully.
That is just something that this says they see the joy in you, and that's what they see. So
yeah,
it's not a good thing. I'm not saying it's not a good thing, but I'm just saying you want them to be married. You want them to find their spouse, but they know the purpose and their wants as far as they can rather be single, happy, than upset looking for somebody or being with somebody. Well, I don't want to cut us short here, but time is elapsing. So I want to say this with 2 minutes left to go. I appreciate, and I know my sister here really appreciates everybody that chimed in, and I know my sisters are doing well, and I appreciate the comments that they made, and I appreciate those that did call in and just listen. Just share this episode with somebody and help them to get closer to their moms or their parents that they do have and understand that there's nothing wrong. As long as you can do and succeed and keep guiding life and keep him first, that everything is possible to which he can get you to where you need to be. He can bring you happiness, joy, and everything else in your life. Sis, you got about 30 seconds. You want one last closing comment or anything?
No, I really enjoyed the engagement in this call. So I want to thank everybody for giving their 2 cents.
More than 2 cents. Okay. I appreciate everybody. We appreciate everybody. And if you could just give a big applause, she might not hear it, but she will feel it, as the motto goes with Brother Marshall would say. So I want to say y'all have a blessed night and a blessed weekend. And join us once again for Sincere Singles on Friday nights, to which we can once again bring good topics and to help each other and encourage each other to do what we need to do in the walk with the Lord. Thank you.